Hey Trailblazers, this is Jason, your host of the Trailblazing Texas podcast. Before we jump into our latest episode, I've got some incredible news for you. Are you gearing up for your next big hike or backpacking trip? Well, we at Trailblazing Texas podcast have partnered up with Trekker Joe's, the ultimate Texas outfitter, to bring you something I feel absolutely special. Listeners, you of the Trailblazing Texas podcast can now get a one-time 15% off their gear purchases at Trekker Joe's. That's right. Whether you're a first-time customer at Trekker Joe's or a repeat customer like me, you can save big and hit the trails well-prepared. So upon checkout, use code TTP15 to claim your 15% discount and, in the process, support an amazing local Texas business. So happy trails, and don't forget to tell your hiking buddies. Now on with the episode. Welcome to the Trailblazing Texas podcast, where we embark on a journey through our diverse Texas landscapes and breathtaking trails while always engaging with our amazing Texas hiking community. So settle in, tighten up those bootlaces, and get ready for the thrilling tales awaiting for you on this episode. Welcome to the Trailblazing Texas podcast. I'm your host, Jason, and today we are back with our series of, hopefully, you all that are listening have listened to the past episodes where we've highlighted some of the really beautiful places in the United States where us Texas hikers like to go hiking and backpacking. So we've had Colorado, we've had Washington. And today we have a representative of the great state of Arizona. Ryan, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Cool. I don't know, Ryan, if you kind of kept up with what we're trying to do, but just kind of dawned on me when I'm in Colorado, when I'm in New Mexico, I see a lot of Texas hikers, right? If I'm on the Texas hiking Facebook pages, there's a lot of people from Texas asking questions about hiking a 14er or, you know, this or that. And so I was, and I've said this in every one of these series, and I'm just going to say it again, but it's like, I was driving to go rock climbing, and it just kind of dawned on me that when I go hiking in some of these places like Washington, in Colorado, oftentimes I just feel overwhelmed because I don't feel like all the information needed. Like, had no idea, like, when you're hiking a 14er in Colorado, you better get to the trailhead at midnight. If you get there past midnight, you're probably late and you're not going to get any parking. I've been to Washington, and, you know, just trying to, you know, you show up to these state parks, no one's there, and you're like, okay, you know, how do I pay, or how do I do this, or, oh, it's a day pass, and, okay, I don't have a printer in my car. Like, it just... Mm-hmm. I sometimes just feel overwhelmed. So kind of, I just, you know, started going through what are some of the most spectacular places, and not even that I've been to, like, you know, you and I are connected through social media, and I've just seen, like, you're hiking almost every day, it seems. And the beauty that Arizona possesses, you know, it's just unbelievable. And I would probably argue that it's definitely in the top three of the prettiest places in the United States to hike. You know, seeing all the stuff that you've done, and just kind of also thinking back, you know, just people travel to Arizona from Texas. You know, you have the Grand Canyon and you have all the other wonders. And I just thought it would be a wonderful episode. So I, again, thank you so much for joining the podcast. And just to let the listeners know, you and I kind of met on Facebook, if I remember correctly, and I think you were taking a trip to Guadalupe Mountains, or you were going through that area, and mm-hmm. we started talking about you wanted to bag the highest peak in Texas, and I think I was sharing some information. And what's kind of funny is right about that time, I published, I believe it's episode 4, just hiker safety. And part of that episode was about don't use a water bladder. And, you know, You can jump in when you want, but you get out to Guadalupe. I told you, you got to start the hike early in the morning. So you get two aspects of the trail. You have the night aspect, which is pretty spooky. And then you can see everything in the day. But I think, didn't you get rained on? It was like a rainstorm.
I did. So I only had that one little chance to do it. And when I woke up in the morning, I actually kind of like slept. I camped in my truck somewhere near the area. I don't remember exactly. But I woke up and it was just pouring down raining. So I was like, well, I'm going to still do it. I threw a poncho on and I just hiked up the mountain. Yeah, when I got done, kind of circling back to your point there, I get in the truck, and a couple days later, I noticed that bladder still, or the pack is still wet. So I'm like, everything else is dry on this thing. Sure enough, there's a little pinhole in my brand new bladder there. And it was a top-end bladder, too. They did replace it. They did replace it.
You know, can you imagine if it was a bigger hole? It's 100 degrees, 90 degrees. It's West Texas. So you're probably used to the heat, but there's no shade, probably just like Arizona. You could really get into a dangerous situation. I just want to tell the listeners, get rid of your bladders. So that was the first thing whenever I asked you to come on the podcast. I was like, oh, we have the bladder story. Yes, we can do that. But you did make it to the top, and it was in really crappy weather, right?
Yeah, it was dark. There was clouds everywhere, and it rained on me the whole time. And then I couldn't even really open my phone to take pictures or videos because my fingers were so wet. I just kind of hit the top and then took like maybe two pictures and then headed straight down. But yeah, by the time I got to the last little quarter of it, there was enough kind of light peeking through the clouds. It wasn't getting sunny at all, but it was enough light to where I can kind of appreciate that last little like 100 feet of the mountain. Yeah, it was cool.
Yeah, that's a shame. And hopefully one day you'll get back. Maybe we can even meet there, because I think it's probably about halfway for us.
Yeah,
like me driving from Houston, because the backcountry of the Guadalupe Mountains is absolutely spectacular. First off, no one's out there. And secondly, it's just, you're like, there's no way this is Texas. So I don't know how public your social media is, but what you post, just like Jamie in Colorado, John in Washington, is truly spectacular. So there's a chance for our listeners to follow you, get connected, to see what you're doing in Arizona, absolutely take this time, Instagram or whatever. But yeah, I mean, the stuff that you post is absolutely spectacular.
I appreciate that. Yeah, I've been doing it for a couple of years now. Just kind of really got into TikTok. That's kind of my favorite thing. My TikTok and my Instagram name are the same. You can look me up by Ryan Leeper, RyanLeeper, or Leeper 2020. And then Facebook's just Ryan Leeper. Everything's public. Usually follow people that follow me for the most part. So,
all right, awesome. Absolutely. To the listeners, if you're into hiking and backpacking, absolutely. I mean, I just know that Arizona's probably on the bucket list, and you have to follow Ryan. Just Ryan, is it like every time you step on the trail, is there a rattlesnake?
You
have more rattlesnake video in pictures than I think the Smithsonian.
It's so funny too, because as I'm walking around, I don't see snakes all the time, and I'm kind of upset. That's kind of one of the goals, is to see one. So I feel like I never see them, and then everybody's accusing me of always seeing them. So it's just it's kind of your own individual thought towards it. I love going out and seeing them, and getting within a couple feet of them and just kind of hanging out with them. Honestly, I just like to observe them and watch what they're doing instead of really messing with them.
Yeah, and actually on last night's podcast, I had a mission to, never thought that I would come forward to, but I love snakes too. Not like I want to, I love seeing them. And so far on the Lone Star Hiking Trail, my hiking season, which starts probably the first weekend of September, I'm batting 1,000. So copperheads, coral snakes, water moccasins. And I don't know why, but probably for the last, I don't know, 3 or 4 years, the goal is to set myself up where I could touch their tail.
Yeah.
And yes, and yeah, I shouldn't bother them. I shouldn't, but I, you know, I'll just walk with them. I'll follow them. I'll observe them. And then when they get into a, you know, and they're just chilling. So it's not like I'm chasing them, but when they, you know, start to go into brush or something, I'll just reach over and then I run this way and then it shoots off that way. And I think I'm about like 64%, 65% success rate. I haven't been bitten, but yeah, it's really stupid and I don't know why I do it, but
you know, they're not really out to get you. So if they feel like they've gotten away, they're not going to turn around anyways. I'll do a little boop on the tail every now and then.
Yeah, good. So I'm not the only one. And yeah, it's just funny that, you know, I never thought that I would admit that. But yeah, it's I wouldn't say it's a fetish, but it's something that I really try to do. So before we get into everything about Arizona, for me personally, I always like to get an understanding of you as a hiker and a backpacker. It interests me. You know, the whole goal of this podcast is, you know, not to interview the most famous hikers in the world. It's really just to hear people like me and you, just our stories. We have stories. We have amazing stories. And it just really interests me in how people get into hiking and what has hiking and backpacking done in their life, you know. So just kind of the first question is, how long have you been hiking and backpacking?
So I got into hiking about 3 years ago. I just kind of fell into it. I just realized I liked it all of a sudden and then just took off full bore. And I was just kind of having a chat with my wife about it. And she's like, yeah, you know, just don't keep it up. Don't let anything stop you. So I just kept going every day. And I got to a point where everybody around me just accepted it and I got to do it. And I do continue to do that most of the time. I'll try to do at least 2 miles and get out in the wilderness area or something, do about 2 miles. Then I'll head home if I'm done. Sometimes I'll pop around a couple different areas. But yeah, it's just a matter of getting out there. I try to do it every day. During the summer, if it gets too hot and I can't go up north, I'll do some paddle boarding. And I was trying to do that every day as well.
Yeah, and you also have some really awesome videos of paddle boarding. I forgot about that.
Yeah, it's been a couple months actually since I went, though. I've been kind of neglecting that, but just really been doing a lot of hiking and just kind of out adventuring with a couple friends lately. So been on the top of my list of things, but I miss it. It's fun too.
So what does hiking and backpacking mean to you in getting outdoors? You know, I think about often there will be a point in my life where I'll never be able to hike or backpack, you know. Mm-hmm. It could be tomorrow. It could be, you know, when I'm 87, every time I leave Guadalupe Mountains, I mean, you know how important that place is to me. Yeah. You know, when I'm leaving, I always stop, get out of my car and I turn and face her. And it's oftentimes emotional because, you know, this could be the last time that I get to see her. That is okay. No, you know, no, her as in Guadalupe Mountains. So yeah, like what does it mean to you?
Yeah. I mean, to me, it started off as just kind of it picked up from hunting and I got onto a couple hunts with some buddies and that just, we ended up doing a lot more hiking than we're used to doing out on our hunts. And so I liked that feeling of getting around and just walking around out in the middle of nowhere. And then I noticed, you know, how much stress relief it was actually doing for me. And then it was just kind of automatic. I needed to do it to keep that sanity from all the stress, you know? So it just works out to kind of soothe that part of my well-being.
Yeah. And so, looking back to when you first started hiking, can you remember or describe your first hiking experience? For me, when I got into it, it was I was with my wife, and it was at Guadalupe Mountain, the Guadalupe Peak Trail. And, you know, we were heading to New Mexico originally to escape a blizzard. And so we were heading to El Paso, and I saw this sign that said Guadalupe Mountains. And I was like, there's no mountains in Texas. What the heck? And so she's driving, I'm Googling, and I'm like, I see this spectacular rock face, El Capitan, and just all the history, you know, and researching it. So that's what I did, like, the whole trip. We still got hit with the blizzard, but, you know, we made it to our destination. And then that, I think that was in December, and in March we made a trip out to Guadalupe Mountains to hike the highest peak in Texas. Thought you had to have hiking boots, so I bought hiking boots, didn't wear them until the hike. You know, had a very uncomfortable backpack, and fell in love with it.
Yeah.
So what about you?
Yeah, I think the first time I decided to hike outside of hunting, I knew about a location of some ruins. And that was also kind of a passion of mine. I wasn't really going to a lot of ruins at that time, but it was a passion. So I had known about this site, and I'm like, I'm going to go find it. Well, I ended up parking in the wrong spot. I meant to only hike like a small ways. I ended up hiking 6 miles, never got to. Actually, I hiked 6 miles, and then I got to where I could have parked.
My gosh.
By then I realized I don't have enough time to see this and make it back before dark, and I didn't have a headlamp. So I was like, I just got to turn around now. So I turned around, hiked back another 6 miles, and I was just wearing my like slip-on work boots that were like composite toe.
Oh my gosh.
So I ended up bashing my toenails into the boots, and I lost a toenail on each foot. And so, yeah, it was a painful hike. I had never hiked that far in my life before. And I did it. And that's when I was like, hey, that was actually kind of cool. I mean, I had to wait, you know, a week or so before my toes were okay. But after, I was like, I got to go do that again. Don't remember what that next hike was. I don't know if it was by my house or not. It just completely gone from my memory, actually.
Wow. So have you ever found Arrowhead? Speaking of ruins.
Yeah, I've found one or two in the superstitions. There's not a lot of Arrowheads around here. I don't know if it's just because we have a lot of mining history, and that kind of, there's just been a lot of traffic in the areas. So yeah, I'm not sure, but I found a couple out here, a couple up north. Everything's been broken except for one. But yeah, I've only found one small broken one at a ruin site. It was super tiny. I mean, you'd be shooting birds or squirrels or something with that thing.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, I mean, there's not a lot. So those are definitely like a really nice find for me. I get super excited about that over anything else.
That's, you know, the Apaches were up in the Quads, and so that's a bucket list, and it doesn't have to be in the Quads, but I always want to find an Arrowhead. And what's funny is this past weekend, so my youngest son is in Corpus, going to Corpus A&M, and he entered some half marathon, so we drove down to support him. And I always wanted to go to Mustang Island State Park, so it's just you know, right across the Gulf, or not the Gulf, but right across the, it's like a little bridge, so you're out in the Gulf of Mexico. And so we went out there, and they had a Native American Day at the state park. So they had an archaeologist there, and he had some arrowheads and stuff. And I was so excited. And so I'm talking to him like, you know, that's one of my bucket lists to find an arrowhead. And I actually got scolded that if I found one, that I should just leave it there and not pick it up.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm picking it up.
Yeah, they don't want you to even touch them. You know, I can't help that. I mean, it's too cool of a thing. Oftentimes you have to pick something up to even find out if it is an arrowhead. I don't dig for them or anything. So, you know, if I see something down by my foot, I'm going to pick it up.
No, I'm picking it up.
But yeah, I mean, it's not going to hurt it. It's been rolling around on a hill for, you know, hundreds of years. So,
and stuff, especially on the top, to me, stuff that's on the top of the ground. I mean, they already know the Indians were there. They already know the history, the, mm-hmm. you know, now if you were digging miles down, okay, it's probably uncharted territory, but just stuff on the top, I'm grabbing it.
Yeah.
So kind of just looking back, what do you think has been your hardest, most challenging hike?
Hardest, I would say, is definitely Flatiron here in the Superstitions. It's just basically straight up. I mean, it's scrambling for portions of it, but it's just so vertical. It's so vertical that you're almost to the point where it's like, okay, maybe some ropes or something. No, it's not that bad, really? Where you do feel that way, but I mean, it's getting there on a couple spots. So I know a lot of people get nervous on there, but for me, it's just that elevation change. I mean, I do that hike. It only takes me about 3 to 3.5 hours from the parking lot up to the top and then back down to my truck. But it's such a quick elevation change. It just kicks my butt. Yeah. That is so hard for me to do that much elevation change. But I push myself to try to like pass people on the trail, even though I'm struggling to die myself. I'm like, I gotta beat them. But I have had one lady pass me and then come back down. Like, she was just running it like it was nothing. But I'm dragging my face along rocks, trying to just make it all the way up. But yeah, that's got to be one of the toughest hikes that I've ever done. And I've probably done it about 4 times now.
So how would you compare that to Guadalupe Peak?
So Guadalupe Peak, I'd say, is more of a trail. I don't recall ever having to scramble or anything with that. It, you know, and I was in the dark, so I was kind of making up a lot of it myself, honestly. Yeah. And so I just kind of feels like I walked a spiral around the top, and that's probably not true at all. But that's kind of like in my mind, that's just how it felt. Where with Flatiron, you're almost like, am I still on a trail? You know, you could kind of see the foot traffic, but it is just awash with big boulders. So you kind of are just like chugging along at this thing, not even sure if you're in the right spot, even when you've done it before. I've done it at least four times now. And I still, every time I'm going up or something, I have to kind of like second guess myself in a few spots. So it just kind of has a lot of opportunity for injury, a lot of opportunity for people to kind of back out and not be able to finish it and conquer it. That's kind of the biggest thing I hear is a lot of people, they'll start making it and they'll get up to the siphon draw, which is where it really starts to kind of pick up that elevation change real quick. But that's what I hear from a lot of people, is that that's where they'll stop and kind of back up. So I initially did that as part of the Six Pack a Peak Challenge. So when I, that first year I got into hiking, I found out about the Six Pack a Peak Challenge, and they had a winter edition, which they gave you 7 options to go hike. And you only had to do 6 of them to get the badge. So I ended up doing it, all 6 of them, in like a month or two. And I realized like that was the most fun I ever had. So I went and actually did it again and did kind of the alternate. I switched out on the other one that I hadn't done. And so I ended up doing it twice for shits and giggles, basically. It was just a fun little thing that once I realized that it was something I could accomplish, I was like, oh, I got to do it again now.
So how far are you from trails?
Oh, I can walk out my yard here and jump on a trail, just hop over across the road. Where I typically hike is usually the Superstitions. There's the main trail that I'll go at for most of my just daily hikes is probably about a 15-minute drive to where I'd park, maybe 20 minutes. But
wow.
And that's only because they're hitting a dirt road and you just have, there's so many ruts, you got to take it so slow. Yeah. It's super. I could see the Superstitions out in my backyard, and it's just surrounded by mountains. There's an endless amount of mountains to just go hike around here.
So now let's start to transition into just what makes Arizona so spectacular. And so are you in the north part, central?
No, I'd say central. Central Arizona, yeah.
So what do you think makes Arizona a top destination for hikers? Like, what do you think brings us to the wonderful state?
Yeah, I mean, I think there is so much diversity. You could be hiking down here during the winter and hiking up north during the summer. You could actually hike the whole state all year round if you do it right. You could hike down here in Phoenix in the summer if you do it in the early mornings or evenings. I like to do a lot of night hikes during the summer, especially if you're looking for snakes and other little reptiles and stuff like that. So you just have so much that you could do, and you could hike all year long. Whenever summer starts to hit and I need to kind of get a little bit of break from the heat, I drive an hour away and boom, I'm in perfect hiking weather. So it's just there's so many different types of landscapes too. So many natural lands, the Grand Canyon, easy. You have a lot of canyons just in general around here. Some of them are rocky. Some of them have flowing water through them. There's just mountains galore. And anywhere I look, there's a mountain. It's in fact, before I started hiking, I didn't even notice the mountains. It's kind of funny.
Really?
Yeah, I would drive and I would maybe kind of like, oh, there's a mountain over there. But now it's like, oh, I look at them. I try to like learn them and know if I'm driving down the road, hey, that's this mountain, that's that mountain. But yeah, it's crazy how many mountains there are here.
So one of my good friends, his good friend, was hiking the Arizona Trail. And what amazed me is how the weather can change like so quickly. So like, I think he was up by Flagstaff, and I guess that's you start to get into some elevation. And like one day it was like way hot, and then that night it snowed, and he was like, his tent was buried in snow, and you know, mm-hmm. he wasn't really prepared. And so yeah, that's you know, I guess it could probably happen anywhere, but that shocked me. That, and even there was a lady that was hiking the Arizona Trail. I was talking to her on the Lone Star hiking trail because she through hiked that one, and she was using some of my water caches. But you know, started following her hikes, and same thing, like, you know, she's hiking one day and she's dying of the heat, and then you know, that night snow comes in and like buries mm-hmm. her tent. And you know, like, and I think at that one time she kind of panicked because she didn't know she didn't have any kind of visibility for the trail. It's just all snow, mm-hmm. and she yeah. wasn't expecting it. But you know, she ended up making it through. But you know, kind of talking about the different landscapes, what should we expect, like the north versus the central versus the south, and only just to kind of compare it to Texas, you know, like where I'm at, we're in the, I guess you could call it the piney woods, but you know, the further out west you go, you're getting into like a plateau, plains, and then West Texas is desert. But then if you get into West Texas at elevation, you're in a forest, and mm-hmm. it's actually pretty spectacular.
Yeah, they'll have you know, the northern part is a lot more like Flagstaff area, is our higher elevation areas, so it is usually kind of cooler there all year long. And then it'll snow. Down here in the kind of Phoenix Mesa area, we experience our summers are hot as hell all day long. Doesn't change. You get maybe a little bit cooler at night, but it doesn't really change. It's always hot. But during the winter, you know, you'll be running your AC on your way home from work, and then your heater on your way to work. It's crazy how much the temperature changes during the winter. It's just all over the place. I mean, it was a little bit like that living in Texas too, but yeah, it's just crazy. And then you get out in the desert, and it's like, once it could be during the middle of the summer, and you get out in the middle of the desert, and the sun goes down, and you can actually be cool. And yeah, it's just crazy how much of a temperature swing you'll see across the whole state. Southern areas, you'll have a lot of sky islands. So you have these mountains with high elevations at the peaks, and they'll have their own like ecosystems, their own animals and species that don't exist anywhere else on any of the other mountains or at any lower elevations. So, you know, you have these like limited little pockets of this species has been breeding, you know, with these traits, and then this one's has these traits. It's kind of actually interesting. But so you get out to like the southwest area, and you just have like desert. It's just straight desert here, and the Phoenix area, you kind of have the mountains, you have the canyons, you have the desert. It's just kind of a mix all in central Arizona. But yeah, it when you start spreading out, you basically have the Grand Canyon takes up the whole northwest corner. And then you have a lot of like the Navajo Nation reservations and stuff are that upper, the northeast corner there. So I don't have a lot of travel time in those areas just because they're kind of limited. But that's kind of a goal of mine, is to start getting out in that more north, east and west pockets off to the sides.
So how does the Arizona, that desert climate, impact hiking conditions? And you know, it's funny that you say like the temperature swing. I had Kip, he lives up in the Texas Panhandle, which, you know, it's there's nothing out there. Well, there are some big canyons out there. It's the second biggest canyon in North America, Palo Duro. So it's right beneath the Grand Canyon, but yeah, it's like desert and stuff. And he was saying in the summertime, it'll be 100 degrees, 105 degrees during the day. And at night, it's like 68, 67. And I'm like, what? He goes, yeah. So a lot of times the parks will close the trails during the day. And then like around 5 o'clock, they'll open them back up for hikers and stuff. So how does that impact you guys?
Yeah, they have a lot of the city parks will close. They'll enforce, you know, closures at the higher temperatures because there are a lot of people that just don't understand how to not get heat stroke and have to come be rescued off the mountain. So they'll do it at the city parks. There's not a lot that they'll do at like the National Forest and Wilderness areas. They will close those out for fires and stuff like that, but they generally leave those open. There was a lot of closures during COVID, obviously, but yeah, they don't do a lot of closures. I know like snow closures, I tried to go up to the upper part of the rim once, and that was closed down. So you'll get some snow closures out in some areas like that, but not a lot of heat restrictions. It's pretty much just, you know, they got to know their limits and hopefully make it in with enough water and out with, you know, their sanity. But it's just kind of, you know, a topic that we hear on Facebook here just locally all the time, where people are going out and either bringing one little water bottle or not bringing any water at all. They're just wearing basketball shorts and flip-flops or tennis shoes. And you have a lot of injuries. Usually people will they'll still make it out without having to be helicoptered out, but you still hear a lot of people getting helicoptered out. And most of the time it's because heat stroke, heat stress, just getting out there. I mean, I'm used to it. I've been in HVAC for quite some time now. And I've spent a lot of time up in attics during the middle of the summer, having to fix somebody's AC up on a roof, just baking up there on the sun. And so, you know, I'm kind of used to it. I kind of know my limits. I still push my limits way too far sometimes, and I could feel it. You start to feel dizzy, start to feel faint, sick. So once I kind of start to notice that I'm hitting my limit and I'm kind of scratching that surface of being in danger zone, I realize I need to either get out quick or I need to find a place that's nice and shady and take as long as a break as I need to. If it means just laying there for an hour, then that's what I got to do. So yeah. I know that that's kind of takes experience to get to that point where you can kind of feel it on yourself and then know how much you can handle before you get to that point. But that is kind of why I like to push myself to limit sometimes. Just I've been in situations where I've ran out of water and I still had 6 miles to go and no other option for filtration or anything. And then in Arizona, you don't see a lot of pockets of water. If you do, it's old, slimy, grimy, you know, yeah. Got all the deers and everything have been drinking out of it. So, you just got to plan for it and know what your limits are and just kind of start off slow and don't get into it so crazy.
Yeah. I mean, there's people here in Texas and so this will kind of lead into the next question that, in Big Bend and Palo Duro, I mean, they die every year. They die heat exposure. We just had someone die, a 24-year-old kid. I don't know that I read the final cause of death, but all likelihood it was heat exhaustion, heat exposure, you know, heat stroke. He just died at Big Ben. You know, talking to Kip, he said, yeah, there's probably, you know, about every 3 or 4 years, there's a few people that die out at Palo Duro just for, you know, the heat. And so when you guys hear about these stories, with, you know, people being rescued or having complications to the heat, do you think it's just as much local as visitors, or it's probably the majority of just people visiting and not really understanding what they're getting into?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of rescues that are local, but I do tend to hear most of the deaths, especially of younger kids, be from visitors and just tourists generally coming to do a quick hike in the area. So they'll get onto a hike that, you know, I often don't really feel is all that crazy, but they're not even used to the amount of heat that we have here. And then they're going and exerting themselves up this mountain, which they're usually picking the hard mountains to go climb to, the ones that have big names instead of just a trail somewhere. But yeah, they're going up, you know, Camelback Mountain and Piestewa Peak and just these mountains that are meant to be kind of the difficult hikes. Those are the ones that are on that Six Pack a Peak challenge. You know, it's those are really high elevation changes in a really short period of time. And a lot of where you're having to use your hands to kind of get around and scramble on it. So you just have a lot of inexperienced people with the heat and just the general landscape that we have here and how quickly that can go south. You just start boiling in your own skin. Crazy.
So what would you say to someone coming into Arizona to hike? What are some of the must-have items that, you know, that they should bring with them in their day pack or backpack?
Yeah, I think obviously I bring my phone. That's one of my main tools. Outside of water, water's number one.
Water. Yeah.
Even if it's a short hike, you still bring a water bottle. I bring my phone. I use an app called Onyx Hunt. They have an Onyx backcountry as well, but I started on the Hunt first. So I use that and I actually track myself. I do mostly hike off trail in the wilderness areas. So I like to kind of know. I mean, it's good for multiple things. I've lost my work phone. I lost my personal phone one time, and that's kind of what really got me into tracking it, is I was with a buddy on a hunt and he was tracking us. So he was able to lead us back to where my phone was out in the middle of nowhere. So that's really what got me starting tracking myself. But then it's also kind of like, I like turning the map blue. So every track I make is just this blue line of the detail of where I went. And so I like kind of turning the whole map blue. I want to do that, you know, across all these states. And so that's one of my big ones. Obviously, your battery could die. You could break the screen. So that's not really a foolproof thing to bring with you, but
one second. This is a Texas hiking podcast. And so when you say you want to turn the states blue, it's not politically blue, but no. I'm joking.
I don't even know. How did that turn out for Texas? Did they go blue or red on this election?
Red.
Okay. Yeah. I know it's been pretty close lately. You're getting a lot of people from out of state coming in. That's it's happening in Arizona a lot too.
So I just, you know, it's a Texas podcast, you know, and you said turn blue. I didn't want people to throw their phones. So it's the trail tracking blue.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, other than that, you know, I have a Garmin. I go out in places where there is no cell phone service. You're not going to follow in all trails. So the Garmin is a way, and I often don't even turn it on. It's just a way for me to know if I break my ankle here, I can turn that thing on. I can get a hold of a helicopter to come get me out of there. If I have a flat tire somewhere on the way to a very off-grid trail, then I have a way to contact someone. I can text message someone and say, hey, this is my location. Send a guy that's got a spare tire, you know? Yeah. So it's just, for me, that's a very important one to bring in a lot of the out-of-city, off-trail type of areas where you're not going to get that cell phone service. Most of our bigger mountains like Camelback and stuff, you're going to still have cell phone service. So you can call 911, come get your free flight off the mountain. But, you know, if you don't know where you're at and you don't have a way to communicate with people, then you could get turned around really easily out there. And then you're thinking you're hiking back to your vehicle, but you're hiking the exact opposite way. And, or like last night, the last two nights I've been out hiking and it's gotten completely dark on me. And, you know, I chose to hike in the dark. I like doing that occasionally if I could still kind of make out that, you know, what's in front of me. But I have two headlamps with me. If one's dead, I got the other one. If I break one, I got the other one. So headlamps are definitely a key if you're going to be hiking anywhere near sunset or sunrise, because especially during the summer months, that's when you're going to start seeing some rattlesnakes on the trail. Yeah. But the hiking boots, I like to wear stuff that's going to protect my ankle because mm-hmm. Every trail here in Arizona is rocky. I mean, you might get in some in the grassland areas where it's not going to be rocky, but you're going to be, even if 90% of the trail is nice and dirt or flat, you're going to be into some rocks at some point. Yeah. It's pretty easy to roll an ankle. So that's pretty much it for me. I'm a little ginger here. So,
and hold on, you know, to the listeners, he has the, I think John would push you to have the most badass beard that's been on the podcast to date. So, nice. You know, you definitely have to see the episode covers. He has a rocking beard.
Thank you, sir. So, yeah, you know, obviously with being, you know, out in the sun, there aren't any shade trees. You're not going to be walking in the forest most of the time unless you're up in like Payson and stuff like that. So I cover up. I got long sleeve shirts that are SPF shirts, so they're not really thick. Everybody always is concerned that I'm going to be hot wearing long sleeve and pants, but I wear clothes that are specific to what I'm doing with, you know, if I'm going to be in a hot area, I'm wearing thinner pants and thinner shirts. Yeah. So I never really feel like being covered up makes me any warmer than not being covered up, other than my hat.
I think it does the opposite. Like, mm-hmm. there's a company, Outdoor Vitals. I just discovered them. They, you know, I have one of their 0 degree quilts because it was a little bit cheaper than my lightened equipment. And my wife said that I could only spend this much money. But I discovered they also have sun hoodies. So I bought, and they were like $37, and I bought three of them. And man, for my last, I think, three or four trips, I don't care what the temperature is, I mm-hmm. love these things. And yeah. you know, we were at in Guad just in October. It's almost 80, 90 degrees. And I felt perfect. And I had a long sleeve sun hoodie. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm a sun hoodie freak now. And Outdoor Vital sun hoodie. I love it.
Yeah, I've been wearing the C-Tech. And I love how they fit. They are kind of snug and kind of like a stretchy material. And then they hold up really well to the cat's claw. So, you know, I catch on a lot of the cat's claw brush out in the wilderness areas, and normal shirts will just yank, or like threads will pull out. And these actually hold up really well to the abuse of the mountains. But yeah, that's got the hood on it as well. And I love that because it covers all my neck. My beard kind of covers up my cheeks, and then my hat covers up the most of the rest of my forehead and everything like that. So with that, I really never have to worry about sunscreen. I never wear sunscreen. It bothers me to have to wear it, honestly. So once I found these shirts, and occasionally if I'm going to be doing a lot of hiking out in the middle of the day, I'll wear even some sun gloves. And those are awesome too, because they'll actually kind of help you scramble. You don't get that abrasiveness on your hand as much. So I love it because the back of my hands will start to get a little bit toasty hanging out from the bottom of the sleeve there. But I always wear long pants, long sleeves, because you're walking by cactus and all kinds of other stuff. Although the pants kind of catch the cactus every now and then, and then you're having to pluck them out. But it's I can't understand how people can hike in short sleeves and tank tops and stuff. It's just the brush out here just gets you. It wants to eat you.
So, and you're absolutely right. I'm a huge wear shorts hiker, and my legs get torn up and they're bleeding, and so I definitely should wear pants. I don't, or at least some type of gaiter. And but yeah, this last trip, I mean, the back of my calves got toasty, so I have some compression socks that I was wearing, and man, they really helped out a lot. But yeah, I definitely should be in pants mode more often. Yeah. And especially like out here because of ticks. Like, I'm on the Lone Star Hiking Trail almost every weekend. I don't really hike a lot in the summer. And that's really, I wanted to ask you the next question about heat preparation. But I don't hike in the summer. So, you know, I rock climb. So that gives me a little bit of like an outlet. So it's not that big of a depression for me. But man, the ticks, I have a phobia of them. And so, like, you know, I have tons of compression socks, because, you know, I don't want to wear pants in the summertime, but like, man, compression socks, like, I should be wearing pants, because it's like I'm totally almost covered up just because of the fear of ticks. And so probably a little irresponsible of me, but you know, sometimes I'm hard-headed.
Speaking of ticks, like, we not have ticks here. I'm sure there are ticks in Arizona somewhere, but I've never experienced ticks in Arizona. I'm going to find some wood, hold on, because I don't want that curse. But yes, I growing up in Texas, I dealt with ticks there, and I'm so happy that that's not a thing here.
Yeah, you grew up, what, in Beaumont, Baytown?
Yeah, around somewhere? Beaumont.
Yeah. So how old were you when you moved out to
Arizona? So I ended up going from high school to the Navy, and that was 2003 to 2007. And then I ended up just moving to Arizona to move in with my at the time girlfriend, then got married. And that was 2007, and then been here ever since.
So your all your formative years, you were in Texas, born in Texas. I knew I liked you for a reason. I forgot that you were
born and raised Texas.
Yeah, a Texan. Yeah. Not too far from where I'm at.
Yeah, I went to Nederland High School.
Oh yeah. I know that high school. So like this next question, I don't know what the right answer is. And I definitely think, and I think you really highlighted some information that would facilitate this. Like, I don't hike in the summer just due to the heat. And it's just, mm-hmm. I'm in my 50s and I don't recover well. And it's, I think what it is, it's just an excuse, right? Because it's just not mm-hmm. comfortable hiking in the summer. But I could hike in the morning. I could hike in the evening. Yeah. So there's not really an excuse. And I don't know that I would ever want to make the statement that you shouldn't hike in the summer. Mm-hmm. And just like, you being in Arizona, like, you hike in the summer, people hike in the summer, people hike all the time. So I think it would be irresponsible for me to say, oh, you should never hike in the summer, but you should definitely do it responsibly.
Yeah.
And how do you prepare? You're in the attics and stuff, so like you're exposed to heat. But if let's say you were not, you had a different vocation, what would be your mm-hmm. opinion on someone preparing to for the heat or for, maybe a summer season of hiking? Like, yeah. What do you think about that?
See, I think it's definitely kind of start off slow. You don't really want to climb the highest peak on the hottest day. If you have the ability to live in the area, obviously you can kind of pick and choose cooler days in the beginning and end of summer, or you can start in the morning or late in the evening. I usually hike into the dark or start off in the dark to kind of buy a little more time on there. I know that kind of freaks people out a little bit, hiking in the dark sometimes, and for good reason. There's plenty of dangers out there, but that's definitely one of the things. There's also here, there's plenty of areas where you can drive an hour or two and be in a cooler area. So if you could find a cooler area and it's within your abilities to drive out there to do that, then that's obviously the best option, because you could prepare all you want and you get onto a really hot day in Arizona. Especially, I hear a lot of people starting the trail at 9-10 o'clock in the morning. That is when it's kind of cool. And so they'll start at the bottom of a hard trail at 9 o'clock, and then by 11 o'clock, they're a story in the news. So, I was with a girl one time and she got freaked out because she got turned around on a trail, and I actually was kind of hiking down on a lower trail and heard her yelling out, or actually saw other people responding to her yelling out before I even heard her. And then once I heard her, I realized that's not that far away, and I can climb right up the side of this. I do it all the time. So I just kind of shimmied up there real quick and got over to her, and she was so concerned, because once I got over there, she's like, okay, I'm fine. And she just calmed down, and there was no emergency or anything. So then she started realizing, crap, people are going to hear about this. I don't want people to know that I got rescued off the mountain. So that was like her next biggest concern was, oh man, I'm going to have to pay for this. And then, oh man, people are going to find out. So yeah, it worked out. She got helicoptered off. She got her free ride and was all happy at the end of it. And I made a new friend, and it just kind of worked out. But yeah, I mean, ultimately, I forgot where I was going with that anyways, but yeah, having to be rescued, that was kind of the thing there is, that is an option. A lot of people are scared to do it, but if you're in a scary scenario, then it's an option. And it's one of those things where you don't worry about consequences, people making fun of you, or if there's going to be a bill. But for the record, as far as I know, if you call 911, it's a free ride. It's on the taxpayers' money. If you call a rescue company, there's going to be charges to that. I know as part of the Garmin, there's rescue there for the registered user of the Garmin. So that's another benefit to having that is, if I feel crap, I can't make it out of here on my own, I can't walk, or if I walk another 10 feet, I'm going to dehydrate and pass away. Then I hit that Garmin. I get somebody coming there.
Yeah. And also with Garmin, you can get insurance. And I think like mine just renewed, or I just got the email that it's fixing to renew. I think it's up to like $60,000, and it's like, I don't know, $20 a year. I mean, okay, yeah. Listeners, don't quote me on this. I'm just, it's not very expensive, and you know, it's a yearly payment, 20, yeah. $30, and it's worth it. Like how much is my life worth to me? Mm-hmm. You know, that's kind of how I think about it. Yeah. And also like what you were talking about, and it kind of just hit me. You can have the best intentions starting out a hike at 5 a.m. or, you know, in the cooler temperatures. The issue is, what happens if something happens, and are you prepared that if you break a leg, you break your ankle, you can't get out, and then the sun comes up, and then it starts to get hot, and then it's noon, it's 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, and you're kind of stuck there. Yeah. You know, are you going to be able to withstand that? Because, yeah, I mean, you could probably start a hike early, get in and get out, and you're fine. But if something happens, are you able to prepare enough to be able to handle, you know, getting into those types of temperatures?
Yeah.
And kind of like what all that means.
Yeah, I mean, any job that you have that you're going to work outside, they train you to kind of get used to the heat for a while. And that's kind of the same thing with large elevation change hikes. They tell you, get up there kind of in the same elevation, get used to it so your breathing can adjust. And it's the same with the heat. You can kind of start off by, if you're going to be coming to the area, your area isn't as hot as ours, you know, and you're used to running your AC on your drive back and forth to work, stop doing that. You know, get used to being in the hot box car or something if you don't have the ability to get used to being in the natural area of it. But yeah, that's kind of another one, just kind of getting your body used to it. And again, just knowing your limits, knowing this doesn't feel right. I know I'm hot, and that's I can feel that, but there's stuff beyond that where you start to realize, okay, medically, I don't feel correct here. Something's going on. Yeah. And then you don't continue to push it after that. You say, all right, this is the limit, and this is where I stop. Once you start feeling those changes, they don't stop, but you don't get used to them at that point. They're there. So I know that I've pushed through and made it to the end of a trail because everything I had left was downhill. And I knew I was going to be in the shade for a decent part of that. So I made the conscious decision, I can make it. And then I paid for it. You know, I sat in my truck, just dying, just trying to absorb some of the AC, pouring water on myself, you know. So then even that, later on that day, I was drained. The next day, I still felt that I was drained. So it has a long-term effect. It's not something that, you know, once you get a couple glasses of water, you're going to feel fine. It is medically changing you. It's hurting your insides and boiling you. So yeah, it's definitely a serious thing. Knowing your limits and knowing, feeling those changes and deciding, okay, this is the stopping point. It may not be, I got to end my day, but it means find some shade, take a break, lay down if you need to, take off your shoes, you know, shed a hat. Usually that's what I'll do, is pop my hat off and kind of let my head cool down. And if I am feeling bad, I'll pop my boots off and lay there and just kind of air out. So yeah. I had that, my first experience with a really bad summer, getting up in an attic for the first time and really kind of doing some heavy labor up there for a long period of time. I ended up having to go grab a bag of ice and laying my head on that and using it as a pillow for a while and just sprawled out on their garage floor. So,
man.
It's just all about trying to get that heat out of your body and whatever you could do to do that, pour some water, you know, if there is a little bit of a stream or something, get in it. That's usually not the case with us here, but some of the areas, Payson and stuff, you can find some streams flowing. So yeah, just hop in a stream and try to cool off that, whatever it takes.
And I think on a lot of the episodes we talk about, and I think Also, if you really get into hiking and backpacking, I think it's important to push yourself and understand how your body handles it, whether it's mileage, like we're talking about, with heat, with cold, understanding if you eat breakfast and you hike, how you feel. If you don't eat breakfast and you hike, how you feel. To really make mental notes. So then when you do get into situations, you understand. First off, I've kind of been in this type of situation. What's my water consumption on a hike that's in the 80s, in the 90s, in the 30s, in the whatever, and the mileage and how I felt after that, because you get, or I get a lot of questions that, how much water do you take on a hike, and how much this and how much that? Like,
And that wraps up another exciting episode of the Trailblazing Texas podcast. We hope you enjoyed the episode today, and stay tuned for our next episode where we will pick back up where we left off and guarantee to uncover many more hiking gems and share many more tips to enhance your experience on the trail. Until then, happy trails and happy hiking.